Thank you very much, Dr. Fikeni. I am Jojo James, the chair of this interview panel, also the chairperson of the Public Service and Administration Portfolio Committee. Could you briefly confirm what is contained in your CV? Not in much details, because we have the copy of your CV.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, honorable members. Let me first express my deep sense of gratitude for the opportunity to come and reflect here. In my CV, in terms of education, I do have BA honors, Peace and Development Studies, Master's, PhD, in different universities as listed. I've chaired quite a number of boards. I've initiated community development projects. And one of the key things I'm doing now, having initiated that, is the establishment of the Indlulamithi South Africa Scenarios 2030, which has become the platform for strategic conversation about the future, for analysis of future trends. I'm a public speaker, I'm an academic, I've been in the heritage sector, and more recently, in the last few weeks, I presented on repositioning higher education in South Africa. I've spoken to the business school on repositioning the business schools to build a capable state, and the other one has been the one on depoliticizing the public sector. So in a nutshell, I have those things, but key to it, if I were to summarize it, I am a person with passion for knowledge, but I'm also a policy practitioner who has been involved in the public sector. Hence, you find that my actual experience and my academic qualifications do always converge. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Dr. Fikeni. The Public Service Commission has a constitutional mandate to promote the values and principles of Section 195 of the Constitution. Now, my question is, briefly, what is your understanding of the functions of the Public Service Commission and the values and principles governing public administration?
Thank you, Chairperson. These are articulated in Chapter 10 of the Constitution and further enunciated in the Public Service Commission of 1997. The first one, in a nutshell, is the oversight over public service. It's the advisory role. It's also the analysis of the sector in order to advise. It's to account to Parliament and advise, empower Parliament on the trends of what is happening in that sector. In terms of the principles, the one of accountability, responsiveness, the one of fairness, independence, those are some of the principles, the ethical conduct of the public service becomes key, especially when you look at the current situation that we find ourselves in the country. So in essence, the Public Service Commission, if one were to summarize, to ensure that good practice in fulfillment of the constitutional mandate of public service is in place. And that fulfillment mainly is to have a capable public service in the service of the people of South Africa.
Thank you. Members will also ask you questions, and they will introduce themselves before they ask their questions.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair, and welcome, Doc. And thank you for availing yourself for this process. Taking from the manner in which you presented yourself and also responding to directly to the question asked by the Chair, one would say that although you have indirectly responded to, I'll start by a preamble then the question. The Public Service Commission functions aimed at, among others, to promote the values and principles governing public service administration, and also to give directions aimed at ensuring that personnel procedures comply with the principles. In your own view, Doc, is the Public Service Commission making any impact in the public service as it were? And how can the Public Service Commission reposition itself to make an impact given its wider mandate of promoting the values and principles governing the public service as it were? Secondly, which is the second question, which is not necessarily linked to my preamble, is that constitutionally, do you think spouse and children of the political representatives and former members should be prevented from doing business with the state? Provide merit to your answer and provide a possible solution. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Well, I would make judgment on the Public Service Commission except to say I think there is a room for improvement. And that room for improvement will actually depend on the PSC not just relying on its own resources but having strategic partnerships for higher impact. But also not just relying on the traditional programs that it has had but analyzing the trends and looking at best practices elsewhere. Because within its own budgets, especially in this time when you do have fiscal crisis, you have to do more with less. I wish it had higher profile. I wish it had an appeal where every other entity, provincially and nationally, in terms of public service, it was a go-to place. But right now, from where I stand, I don't see that. Now, having been involved in training some of the Public Service Commission personnel, having been involved in giving lectures to the School of Governance, having been involved in giving lectures in the business schools where some of the public servants go to, I do see a scope of what they could do. But most important, now that I've spent a bit of time in the last few years on the scenario planning, on the trend analysis, it is not only what ought to have been done, but what are the emerging trends? Whether within the context of the fourth industrial revolution, the technologies, smart governance, e-governance, that could be utilized in order to amplify the role of the Public Service Commission. What are the partnerships with the media that could make sure that Public Service Commission is a point of reference? its presence in the social media, because that's what now is the key area that drives the agenda in many ways, even for the media. What are the partnerships with the business schools and universities? More so because I work with most of the universities across South Africa, the vice chancellors or the deans of these business schools. One would immediately want to translate that into an effective tool for the PSC. I've been talking to a friend of mine, we studied together, Dr. Mary Mwande, in Kenya, who is in their Public Service Commission, and a few other people in Asia. And I visited Vietnam, their school, which is training public servants. All those are some of the things to say, what can we do to improve the profile of the PSC, the effectiveness of the PSC, without using too much of resources, because we always have this popular refrain, if I get more budget, I'll do more. Here you can do more with less. On the second question, I do think that where spouses and children of politicians, especially in government, want to do business with government, you ought to have the stringent possible conditions to ensure that there is nothing in terms of the misuse of influence because of their parents' proximity to power, and everything is above board. If you are the son or the daughter or the cousin of a politician, it cannot be that you have never bought a wheelbarrow. You suddenly, because your father or mother has become a minister, you have become this genius in civil engineering and construction projects and so forth. There is something wrong there. It is known throughout the studies, throughout the world, that children and people around political leaders use that influence. And you can almost see the take-off when all of a sudden a person who was a nobody is everywhere, winning every tender and so forth. And that is where the Public Service Commission ought to come in, because this is the cancer the country is suffering from. And I've raised that issue in the public spaces. I've raised that issue in different forums. So I've been quite consistent with that particular issue. The second one, the lifestyle audit. And also the appropriateness of anyone winning a tender. This issue of people winning a tender when you have never been in that sector has costed the country, the state, the taxpayers a lot of money. So to me, I would look at best practices, but have the most stringent conditions. And once a person has done something wrong, use technology, biometric mechanisms to track that person not to get other opportunities, because people reinvent themselves and they reappear somewhere.
Thank you, Chairperson. I am Miriam Gibi, a member of this panel. I have two questions. But my first one, the Constitution directs the public service to be professional, accountable, and development orientated, and the NDP further amplifies this constitutional directive by identifying specific steps that need to promote the values and principles across public administration. Now my question is, what is your understanding on the vision of professionalizing the public administration in the country? In your response, Data. Could you please distinguish between cadre deployment based on the meritocratic and bureaucratic into the public administration? What could be the role of the Public Service Commission in ensuring professionalization of the public administration is institutionalized? And my second one is maladministration and corruption are cancers so ingrained in the public service has become the new normal and is impacting negatively on the development in this country. Now the question therefore is, what causes corruption and how can the Public Service Commission play a meaningful role in preventing, reducing and curbing corrupt practices in the public service? Once more, in your response, please indicate current weaknesses in the system and propose your own solutions. I thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Member. Those are very important issues. I want to start by saying this. The Constitution talks of the development of a capable state. The National Development Plan talks of this capable state. The President, in his State of the Nation address, has talked of this capable state. All political parties, when they put their manifestos, they talk of this capable state. There is a reason for that. You can never be a developmental state if you do not have a capable state. And all countries that have shown development have leadership and capable state. Even our own reports in the Indo-Lamity scenarios 2030 have foregrounded the issue of institutional capacity of state as one of the key if we are to put ourselves out of this situation. So professionalization is key in that sense. We have seen countries like Israel, Italy and others with coalition governments that collapse every other 18 months. But those states never collapse because they have capable, professionalized bureaucracy, which is non-partisan. So the first problem that we have here is the politicization of our bureaucracy. Even worse, that even within a ruling party, if it is factionalized, the bureaucracy itself becomes factionalized, the deployments become factionalized. You begin to see the high turnover of leaders, high turnover of public servants, and therefore high turnover of policies before they even have any impact. And that is what the country has suffered from. RDP to GIA, GIA to GIPSA, GIPSA, ASPISA, New Growth Path, National Development Plan, and so forth. So we have a graveyard of policies which have never seen the day of light because of these changes. So South Africa has this ample supply of good policies. It has a well-acclaimed constitution. It has a well-acclaimed governance framework in terms of audit and so forth. But implementation is the problem. If we fail to professionalize and have a capable state, we wouldn't be far from what you have seen in the Arab Spring. Because remember, it was a failure of state to provide. But in order to professionalize, we must have clear standards agreed upon. And we must identify the nature of the problem before it becomes too big of a problem, and that's where the Public Service Commission, at this particular moment when we talk of a capable state, ought to be holding the flag, working of course with government, working with the portfolio committee, with parliament, mm-hmm. to which it accounts, such that even civil servants working there have a professional pride of being in government. They look forward to the calling of being in that particular space. But you need security of tenure. You need less interference. Political deployment of cadres is a global phenomenon. You can't say I'll reduce it to zero. But you direct it to very specific areas. You want a chief of staff, you could have that as your political deployment. But you want a DG, that's a professional appointment. You want a chief director in this or DDG in that area, we need competence. Not people who will show up in gala dinners of this or that party because it is in governance, or they show up and ingratiate themselves to this minister and that minister. When ministers change, then all of a sudden you have this turnover. In order to demonstrate that, because many political formations have talked about it, we need to have a barometer to determine and show the results of the damage caused by this. And these published annually so that we can see the connection between this particular decay of public service and the impact it has. What is the cause of corruption? Once people in a given country start seeing politics and positions in government as the only way up, because there are no other opportunities in business, there are no other opportunities in civil society, you are likely going to have this compression of people trying by all means to get into government for wrong reasons, rather than it being a calling. It's because I want to have security for the next 5 years. They are not having the people at heart in that process. So that's where things start. And when that starts, as it has been across the world in different countries, you start having a patronage network, which sometimes people call a patrimonial state. Then the other thing that we should be looking at is the relationship between business and politics. Very poisonous arrangement if you do not expose it and understand its patterns, because there is a corrupter and a corruptee relationship. That ought to be regulated. There ought to be disclosures. There ought to be transparency and guidelines into that effect, because now there is too much money into our politics to a point where the business sector may have an overbearing influence in our politics. So to me, the last part is lack of consequences. If you want to fertilize any corruption, let no one see no consequence. Consequence management. Where people have done wrong things, they stay at home for 3 years being paid while someone else is acting. There ought to be a special dispensation to deal with that particular problem, because it's a cancer where people begin to see that it pays to do wrong. Even worse, when a person who has done wrong disappears for a few months, they reappear as ambassadors, they reappear in other deployments. And what I'm saying here, I've raised it even at DERCO, where we designed the Diplomatic Academy that Parliament and President has approved. Because we said, if you want to professionalize, let's be clear, these ill practices cannot continue where certain sections of the service become the space for fugitives from wrongdoing, and yet somewhere you want to professionalize. Very tough decisions, trade-offs, decisiveness ought to be taken if we are to get rid of the cancer of corruption. And those are some of the things that we ought to be looking at. And most of the developmental states have almost zero tolerance of corruption, especially in public service.
Doctor, I am Honorable Smith, a member of this subcommittee. I have two questions to ask from you. The statement that I'll read and thereafter ask a question. Professionalization of the public service can happen as a function of meritocracy, which is a system of appointing or promoting staff based on knowledge and skills. Therefore, my question would be, as a commissioner of the PSC, how would you advise government departments to institutionalize meritocratic ethos in the administration of the state in order to achieve professional public service? And my last question to you would be, how do you think the PSC can, one, strengthen its oversight, two, oversight by Parliament? Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Sibisi. I do think that we could make merit fashionable and something to look up to in the following manner of making a transition to a merit-based society where excellence, where integrity, where ethics, where hard work and competence is rewarded. The first thing is performance management system. You'd have to start by doing the skills profile and the skills audit to see what you have in a given space. Where you see weaknesses, the first chance is to build capacity. The second chance is to channel people to where they are supposed to be. Let's say, for example, a person with theology ended up being a CFO, and God knows how. You then sit down with that person after doing the skills profile to say you could work better in the ethics space rather than struggling with the balance sheet, with the audit committees, which is not your competence. But also, I'm fascinated by other countries. Among those, Vietnam is one of them. Once you are appointed to a board of a state-owned company or into any particular position, you are taken into a deep immersion training program for that particular role. Whether it's a board of Transnet, you ought to know something about transport infrastructure rather than just appearing and you have a two-hour induction. The second one is the performance management system. Put up front so that people know the targets. But you know what has happened, a wrong thing that has happened to us, because stealing, corruption has become such a big problem. people think that clean audit, the issue of conformance, is the only thing. Some of them do not even spend money. They even forget what was the mandate of the entity. They say, I didn't steal anything, therefore give me bonus. As if stealing was one of the key deliverables. The other one is to have a discussion with the training institutions, as I was saying, to the business schools and universities, to shift, because I challenge the business schools to say, most of the people who want to be CEOs and DGs, they normally say, I have an MBA. I went to this business school. I said, what is it that you have done that seem not to emphasize ethics, integrity, and how would you infuse that into everything else? And of course, in that profiling of skill, I would also make sure that you identify talent and send them to the best training institutions in the world and give them internships in those, so that when they come back you can see that merit is rewarded. I could go on this, but at the same time the other issue is that the world is changing whilst we talk. How do you make sure that the skills of the future that people should be competent in are also infused in this? In the training of election management bodies, in the training of people to be deployed as diplomats and in other forums, I've actually emphasized the training to unlearn some of the things which are no longer relevant to the work that we ought to do, in order to relearn new skills. Because the other problem that you see that stands on the way of merit, the person who says, I've been here 37 years, not knowing that they might have been the best, their skill might have had merit in the first 7 years, the other 30 years they have been actually a weight into the system, adding no value nor merit. So those are some of the things to say. If you are a good typewriter and computers came in, your skill is now redundant. New training, new areas of competence become the issue. I think I'll stop it. I'll stop there for now.
Can I make a follow-up question? There was also the last question, but can you put on the mic, Honorable?
Okay. Yes, it's on. I'm not sure whether you did get my last question about oversight.
Okay.
Yes. It was, how do you think the PSC can strengthen its own oversight and also strengthen oversight by Parliament?
Thank you very much for that question. Sorry for rushing. The first one, I do think that when the committee is doing its own strategy session, and when the PSC is also doing its own strategy session, there ought to be convergence or participation so that there is a transfusion from the two institutions. As I indicated earlier, if we have evidence-based approach to the oversight and what works and what doesn't work, and we partner with the institutions, whether it's universities, research institutes, policy institutes, and so forth, for looking at best practice, that will go a long way in terms of strengthening PSC's own capacity to improve its oversight role. But once it has done that, looking at the trends, the big data analysis, the trend analysis, has become the big thing now. Instead of saying I'll go to each province, I'll go to the, you have a tool or a barometer to see what are the trends, if it's corruption or poor performance or poor results in your audit outcomes. What are the common things so that your oversight zoom into those rather than deal with case by case? If you have no budget, you can't finish that particular work. So that when you come to Parliament, you say these are the trends, and they are reported regularly, and you say this is what has worked in different countries. And where there are shortages or gaps in our policies, you are able to say, like I was saying, in terms of fighting corruption, these are the specific things that we're proposing. That, I think, will go a long way in having that particular oversight role. But regular accounting to Parliament and advising to say A works, B doesn't work. You can even work with Scopa, work with the Auditor General to see what the trends are and retreat and say, why have our advices and oversight rules not been as effective as they should? So in that way, I do think that we will go a long way, even with a limited budget. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Fideli. There's a member of this committee, Honorable Clark, who is not in the room, but she is on the virtual platform. She will ask you questions as well. Honorable Clark.
Thank you much, Chairperson. My first question is, it is believed that the responsive, ethical and values-driven public service depends on, among other things, the investigative function of the PSC on public administration malpractices, particularly in the areas of irregular appointments and the curbing of corruption in government departments. First, my first question relating to that, how can the PSC strengthen its role of investigation of unethical conduct and play a meaningful role assisting government to curb corruption in public administration? Next question. The power to appoint in South Africa is assigned by Section 3, Subsection 7 of the Public Service Act. Ministers or MECs can delegate the power to officials within their departments. What are the major obstacles in the recruitment system in the public sector? Is the public sector recruitment system effective in order to ensure professional and a capable state? And two, what can be the role of the PSC in eliminating unethical practices in the recruitment system in order to ensure public servants are appointed based on merit? I thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Clark, for those questions. In the first instance, I do think that there is a need for capacity building for the PSC to have the investigative effectiveness. And of course, some of these do need resources, as we have seen with the NPA, with the SIUs, with many, entities that deal with criminal justice and many others that deal with investigation. But I do think that, as I indicated earlier, if you were to look for each individual case, which we must, it could take a long time. But if you begin to analyze the pattern and the trend, your advice becomes more pointed on a wider scale rather than case by case where you are told this particular case has taken so long. Let's take, for example, people, conflict of interest, people doing business, with government when they are in government. you find that this is a common thread, not only in national, provincial government, but also in local government. Even though local government is not within our sphere, having some relationship with entities such as SALGA becomes important. You glean into their own trend analysis, into their own analysis of the patterns of these things. It's easier to preempt, to anticipate such. But not only that, with the change of environment now, COVID-19 has forced us kicking and screaming into e-governance, into the use of virtual platforms. Those two will also come with their own downside, will also come with their own unethical practices. How do we anticipate those and say what will be the crime of the future? And what policies should we put in place? How do we begin to say, instead of trying to design laws of crimes which are fading into the past, in the new technologies, what will be the nature and the face of crime? So that trend analysis and utilization and working closely with the research institutions, with universities, with policy institutions that are already looking into those issues can make us have greater impact even with less resources and begin to design intelligent policies as well as investigative effectiveness in all that. The use of artificial intelligence empowered ways of tracking and investigations. I had several discussions with Professor Marwala, who is the AI expert in the UJVC, on the same, and several other people in his committee. And they were showing amazing things that can be done to curb corruption. Just in home affairs, just in management of IDs and permissions and so forth, in licensing and so on, in promotions, where it would immediately reveal. So to me, I would say, for high impact on a wider scope with less resources, look for trends. Yes, if there are cases to be followed, investigated, deal with those, but don't be trapped into those alone. The recruitment system. I've already spoken to the issue of CADA deployment gone wrong and gone rogue. And that in itself, I think many political formations from the ruling party to the opposition parties have agreed that there is a weakness in this system and how it has been abused. So that is the first problem of political recruitments instead of recruiting people on the basis of merit. In fact, for me, in the recruitment processes, I would bring professionals. If I say CFO, I bring well-known finance experts from the private and the public sector to come and sit in those panels because they are not beholden to that. You make it transparent. You bring in experts. They can tell when something wrong is going wrong. And they can tell, and then you go through a number of verification processes that even the vetting as to who is shortlisted in the process. And you put the issue of building a meritocratic society as the prominent feature. It doesn't matter where the person comes from if they can demonstrate that they can do the job. That in itself is key. And it has been shown that the studies across the world, countries that are merit-based are growing their economies. They are uplifting their people from poverty. But where you get your recruitment wrong, then you have your public service wrong. That's why PSC then would be coming up with templates, evidence-based, on the best mechanisms of making sure that you only get the best. for the positions, and you give a recognition to talent, and that in itself I think is very important in the professionalization of public service.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, the dance again. My name is Rosina Komane. I'm the member of this committee. Having listened carefully to your answers, particularly on members of the public service doing business with government, I want to put it to you that there is a very huge loss of public money due to corruption, especially with the public servants doing business with the state. But then my question would then be, in your own opinion, how could public servants be stopped from doing business with the state, since there is legislation already that is preventing this practice, yet it is still going on? Thank you, folks.
Thank you very much for that question, Honorable Rosina. Nothing takes place of strong, decisive leadership, which is ethical, in government, in the departments, as the first step of making sure that you stop this particular trend. But the Public Service Commission should raise its profile and also raise pressure where there seem to be the slowness of the process, where you even publicize and have regular report backs to the public and parliament on the impact of the delay of having a proper legislation to curb this particular problem. But there is nothing stopping Public Service Commission from publicizing statistics and even names of those who are involved in business with government, so that you begin to have a deterrent effect for those people who are doing just that. Because if you are not transparent in the exercise, and if you are not aggressive in addressing these issues with the leadership, they might take longer. But each time there is a delay, you come back to Parliament, you partner with Parliament to say, let's move with deliberate speed. In the last 6 months of the delay, this is the cost, this is the rand value of what has been lost to people doing business with government. Because there is another problem here where the problem has been identified. There seem to be lack of political will at times to move with speed. So PSC, as a constitutionally recognized entity working, of course, and accounting to Parliament, ought to take a lot more forceful role in making sure that where there are delays, the damage is exposed.
Dr. Pigeni? Is there any question you want to put to this panel?
Well, I would not have a question except to say I appreciate the opportunity. And if I was a successful candidate working with this committee and parliament, the impact of my contribution, which is made out of a calling rather than just it being a career move, would be seen, as has been the case in the past. when I chaired the IDT, I didn't hesitate to go to the Accountant General and say, investigate everything where there is a wrongdoing, whether it's a board member or executives. And the same with the future trends, because the key thing, we might be focusing too much on what has happened. There is a lot of what is going to be happening in a volatile, uncertain, and complex environment. What are the trends of future public administration? That's where my emphasis will be. But I'm just humbled by the opportunity. I don't take it for granted.
Thank you very much, Dr. Figeli. As you are aware, we are interviewing a number of applicants here. You will be informed of the results of this interview in due course. Once again, thank you very much. You are free to